Good evening, everybody. Welcome to this week's installment of Uncovering Midrash, Parshat Shemot. We are going to be looking into what happens with the story of Moshe at the Malone, at the hotel. So let's get started. But if anybody has any comments, please feel free to chime in whenever you're ready. So here we go. So the Haunted Hotel. Okay, so the first question we have is obviously, well, what are we talking about? Okay, so for this, so everybody hopefully can see this nice and large. Please let me know if you have an issue seeing it. Okay, so the question is, what is going on with this short story? So it's the background. So, right, so Jews have been enslaved in Egypt. Hello, Nathan. So just a little bit of background. So the Jews have been enslaved in Egypt, and now finally, after 200 years, God is trying to convince Moshe to take that he's going to be the one to take the Jews out of Egypt. So now, as Moshe is on his way from Midian, where he'd been hiding out from Paro, now he is heading back to lead the Jews out of Egypt. And on the way, there's this strange story. So the question is, what exactly happened in the story, and what does that teach us about what went on in the interim? So for that, I'm going to read the Hebrew and then the English, because for the rest of you, we'll probably read primarily the English. Again, you'll have both the Hebrew and English in front of you. Please feel free to chime in. So yes, I'll read the first source, and then afterwards, if anybody would like to volunteer to, please do. Okay, so Vayiba Derek Malon, Vavkeshehu Hashem, Vavakesh Hamito. It came to pass on the way at the lodging place that the Lord sent Medin and sought to kill him. Okay, so this is, right, well, the translation from JPS 1917. So they're on their way back, and then all of a sudden, the Lord. Right, they're at an inn, a hotel, lodging place of some sort, and then all of a sudden God decides to kill him. But the cowkeeper of Thor, the quarter to Lapana, but the galler at love, but Tomer, Ki Hatan, the Mimatali. The Zipporah took a flint and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at his feet, and she said, surely a bridegroom of blood art thou to me. Vayarev, Vayir, Bimenu, Az, Amra, Hatali, Lamulo. So he let him alone. Then she said, a bridegroom of blood in regards of the circumcision. So I'm sure everybody completely understands what just went on, because I don't. Okay? Right? This is very confusing. So before we go to the Midrash, which goes to try to explain it, what is unclear about what we just read? What was confusing?
Why did God want to kill him?
Right, the why of it, right? Why is all of a sudden God trying to kill him? So, anything else?
Where is this lodging place?
Where is this lodging place? Good question. What else?
Why did Moshe do this before? Why did he leave it up till now to do the bris?
Right, why is the bris happening now? Good. What else? So I'll throw it out there. There's a lot of ambiguous pronouns. Okay, the word him comes up, but who is him? Right, what we don't see at any point is the name of, right, so who is him?
Doesn't say Moshe anywhere.
Another question would be for a slightly ambiguous pronoun would be that of his son or her son, right? Which son?
I was like, but I thought it was only Gershom now.
That's the question. We've only heard of Gershom's birth at this point. We know by the end that Moshe has two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. So the question is, which one is it?
Huh.
Okay, so there's a lot of questions. And then, so the other question, so, right, so when we say, whatever the question, so the question, we figure out who this him is, who this son is, why this is all happening, what is going on? Okay, so if it didn't, so as far as, okay, so these are the questions I hope we make sure to get, and I think we got them. Okay, very good. So now, next section is Midrash itself. Okay, so now we're going to take a look at Midrash Rava, the Shmot Rava, so where there's going to be an a longer version of what happened in order. So there's also, I would like to note, so this story is also explicated in the Mishnah, as well as in the Gemara, both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, as well as being quoted in several different versions, also in various Midrashim. So we're going to first look at the version in Midrash Rabbah, and then we're going to see whether or not this answers all of our questions, or if we're still confused, and see what the other options are. Okay, so we'll start by going through just this Midrash, and if we have time, I'll try and summarize the other possibilities that there are commentators. We won't have time to read all inside them. Okay, so whenever it is bolded, that is the Pasuk. Whenever it is unbolded, then it is not the Pasuk. Okay, and generally the linking verb between the two is, you'll see the words miyad, it's like immediately, would be the way when we switch from, you know, the transition point from, you know, text from the commentary back to the text of the Torah itself, which is different than many of the other midrashim that we've learned together so far, where we were quoting different parts here and there. Now we're actually, you know, going through just a story. We're not quoting from any other psukim in Tanakh. This is just what is going on in these three psukim. Okay? So who would like to, so again, this is only part of it. There's another part to the Midrash. Also, I just split it up so that way we can read it all clearly. Hopefully everybody can see it nice and clear. If it's not big enough, let me know and I'll see if I can make it bigger. Everybody can see it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I know that it's a little bit grainy for me, but hopefully everybody can see it just fine. Okay.
So, let me read.
Yes, please.
Okay. I was looking down. So it's this Shmot Rabba 5:8. Is that what I'm reading?
Correct. Yeah, the English. Maybe okay, you can turn your phone sideways just because it'll be bigger.
Okay. The phone is great. You can enlarge everything. It's amazing. And it came to pass on the way at the end, Brit Milah is so important that even though Moshe didn't waste even one moment, therefore, when he was on the way and was busy finding a place at the inn and didn't immediately circumcise his son Eliezer, interesting, immediately that the Lord met him and sought to kill him, even though it was supposed to be an angel of mercy, even so it sought to kill him.
Okay, so now we've got an answer to the why a little bit, right? So the question of why is Moshe being, so we found out who's being killed, right? Who's the one who's being, you know, attacked?
Moshe.
It's Moshe. And right, that's just one question I had before. It also explains the why. Why is he being attacked?
Because he didn't circumcise his son.
He didn't circumcise his son fast enough, right? He decided, oh, you know, God told me to go, so I should go. And God's saying, nope, you should have circumcised him first. Okay, so as far as, you know, why he thought that, so, you know, Ibn Ezra says that he had, you know, a tradition that, you know, kind of similar to the fact why the Jews didn't do milah when they were in the desert, that if you're about to go on a journey in the desert and it's dangerous for the child, therefore you would not give the circumcision just then. So this is, so even though that tradition, what that they may have had it already, that is a incorrect tradition to have, and you really should do milah, and you should have delayed the trip. Okay, so, and right, and we also found our answer to which son it was. Here it says Eliezer. Okay, so it could also be Gershom. We'll get to that a little bit later. Okay,
but it wouldn't make any sense that God would try to kill the son because he didn't do anything. The mitzvah is for the father to have a meal for the son, isn't it?
Correct. Right, correct. Moshe is the one being swallowed, according to the Midrash, right?
It wouldn't make sense otherwise.
Correct. It wouldn't be fair to kill the small child. It just seems like a little unfair to him. Like, how is a small child circumcising himself? Like, that's just not fair. Right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay? And also explains what the role, why the inn is because issues that, you know, Moshe found time to find a place for people to sleep, but he didn't find enough time to, you know, I'm sure everybody here has been to a bris, you know, many times. It doesn't take that long.
No.
Right? How long does the bris take start to finish? You know, from the, you know, like what, 10 minutes? Right. Slow? Right? It's quick. Right? As we see by, when Zipporah does it, it's just like, whoop. So
is this proof that a woman can be a mom?
No comment.
Okay.
Yes, this is very much debated in the post game as to whether or not, you know, based on what Zipporah did, was it proper, not proper? Did Moshe have to do, you know, have to have a dumb bread afterwards? Did you have to do, you know, do a little prick to make sure that even though like the surgery entirely done by somebody who had been circumcised? It's a whole giant muscle, okay, and we're not going to.
Yes, correct. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, this is where the discussion comes up in the, you know, in all the various commentaries. Very good question. Thank you. Okay, this is the first half of the Midrash. Okay, and then the Midrash continues.
I have a question.
Yes.
Why is there the assumption that it should have been an angel of mercy? Why is that assumption made?
Generally by Brit Milah, we say that an angel's presence is a positive thing. For instance, the angels that visited Avram after his circumcision, so they came, you know, 3 days later, and the Midrash says that he had that their visit, right? One of the angels was Raphael, who in turn ended up healing Avram from the pain. For more on how angels work and that, I'll hopefully be giving a series on that for the Vayit at the end of the month. Stay tuned for more information on the exact dates and times. Okay, end of the month.
Okay. Thank you.
Excellent question. Okay, so now we have the first half of the story down more or less. Okay? So now we're going to see some questions that we didn't even ask yet that the Midrash is going to both answer and answer for us, the ones we haven't thought of yet. Okay, so who would like to read this part? This is the, I'm happy to have the women read because, you know, Zipporah is the one doing all the action here. So, volunteer?
I read.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
Then Zipporah took a flint. How did Zipporah... that Moshe was in danger. Oh,
no, sorry, I forgot a word there.
Something's wrong. How did Zipporah know that Moshe was endangered because of Milah? Because the angel swallowed Moshe from his head to where the place of the circumcision is. Since Zipporah saw that he was only swallowed until the Milah, she knew it was about the Milah he was being damaged. She also knew the power of circumcision, as the angel was unable to swallow Moshe beyond that point. So immediately, and cut off the foreskin of her son and cast it at his feet. And she said, surely a bridegroom of blood art thou to me. She said that my groom should be given back to me in the merit of the blood of this circumcision, since I fulfilled the mitzvah. Immediately, so previously, the angel, let him alone. Then she said, a bridegroom of blood in regard of the circumcision. She said, how great is the mitzvah of circumcision that my groom was worthy of death for delaying the fulfillment of circumcision. And without the mitzvah, he would not have been saved.
Okay.
Are you done?
So what are the new questions that were asked as well as being answered here? Right, so the first question we have is, is, well, how did Zipporah figure this out? Right, because like it seems a little like very sudden that, well, one is we find out that the attempt to kill it involved some weird swallowing, which is strange. But again, that mechanism, besides the mechanism being super strange and weird and you know, and a source of nightmares, It does explain how Kippur would have known to do that the question is about Mila, because there is very, very obvious and blatant imagery going on there about Mila, right? Being swallowed until the point of circumcision, and you know, and therefore she, like, yeah, she put two and two together that, like, oh right, Mila's a thing. Yes.
So okay, so circumcision was a thing also with where she grew up, because I thought it was just a thing. It was just like a, how would she know about circumcision? A, she had sisters, and B, I thought it was like a breed with Abraham. Was this a custom that other people had?
So, right. So that's why it works. If you say that this is Eliezer, the second son, right, as opposed to Gershom, right, the first son, it works out very well. Because why do you know that it's, how do you figure that out? The answer is because it could have been a different son, but it wasn't.
Well, she wouldn't have known about it.
If it was the first, right? The question was which son, right? So then, if the first son already had a brit, she knows that Jewish boys get a brit, right? A brit milah. So she would know already. If it's the first son, the question is how'd she figure it out? So then there's either A. So she could have, you know, noticed. She could have heard of it before. Presumably, Moshe had to be guard for a while at this point, because Moshe ran away when he was younger, and is returning when he's 80. So odds are, maybe over the course of the last 40 years, they spoke once or twice. Maybe he talked up to Mila. Possibility. Right? So one of those two things would have had to have happened. So that's the one advantage of saying that the child was Eliezer, because she's seen it done before, she knows what to do, and therefore she can do it pretty easily. Or, I mean, has some idea at least what's going on there. Okay? The other option is she could have known about Mila because, well, she was married to somebody who's circumcised. That's the other option. Okay, so another question that's asked and answered is the question of who is the chatan that's referred to? Who is the bridegroom? So what does the Midrash say? Who's the bridegroom?
Not Moshe?
Correct. My Moshe. Room. Correct. Right. That's what the Midrash says is Moshe. Okay? And then ends with the, you know, we see how great the revision was. That means that that Moshe was worthy of death, right? No mention of the son being worthy of death. Okay, that's what we see from here. Okay, so now let's go back and look back at the Tzukim, right? So we say that so they're all together, and then they go, right? They all leave Midyan, they go to an inn. The problem being that they went to the inn without having, they left Midian without having first circumcised Eliezer. And then God decides that for Moshe not to circumcise his son, he's worthy of being put to death. And then, right, and then Kippurah notices, because the angel's swallowing Moshe in a strange way, that I need to do Mila now. And then she does Mila for her son, Eliezer. And then, by doing so, and then places it at his feet. Again, whose feet is it?
Moshe's feet.
Right, Moshe's feet, seemingly. Did they say whose feet? No, it doesn't say whose feet. Okay? Right, so there's no mention of whose feet it is here, by the way. So that's not clarified by the Midrash. And then, right, and who's the bridegroom? We say that's Moshe. Okay, and we see about how important the mitzvah of Mila is. Okay, but this is not the only way to read the Midrash, as I'm sure everyone probably has guessed by now. So in terms of where does this question first come up? So now we're going to look at the closing statement of the Mishnah looks a lot like, of the Midrash is actually Mishnah. Okay, so this is a Mishnah and Nedarim in the third paragraph, ninth Mishnah. So we have Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha saying that how great is the mitzvah of circumcision, as is evident from the fact that the punishment of Moshe, even though that he's, you know, Moshe Tzadik, Moshe the righteous, for not circumcising his son when he was capable of doing so, was not postponed even for a full hour. Right? So then he was punished as soon as he did, like, God didn't wait, he got punished right away. Okay, but of course, as you probably could guess, this statement is confusing. Right? The statement of Mishnah does not explain the full story. You're left being confused. So not to worry, you're not the only one who's confused. You know who else is confused? Gemara. Okay, so please let me, hopefully this is right, so everybody can, so now we're going to look at the Gemara, and we'll see what some of the questions the Gemara has. Okay, so the first one is a very similar version to our Mishnah. And so we're saying, we'll just skip that. So saying how important Mila is. So we're going to turn to the second paragraph over here.
Can I just go back for 1 second?
Yeah,
just to the question that was asked very early on, does that mean women can do a Mila? Obviously, this proves that they can, because it was accepted. I mean, the fact that the angel and Hashem accepted it as a Mila, that tells me that a woman can do it.
Right. That is a very strong for the correct, but it is a subject of debate. So we are going to halachic debates. We're not going to get into that halachic discussion now, because that's beyond the scope of what I prepared, as well as will take much longer to explain. Okay, so excellent question. I'll hopefully be able to address it at a future date, but I don't think we have enough time to go through that, as well as get through the other questions on the story.
So for now, the only reason I'm bringing that up is just because it seems like the fact that after she did it, everything was fine and dandy. The problem no longer existed anymore.
Correct.
That's the only reason why I'm bringing it up. That's all.
Correct. So the other answer people say is that it may have... And whether a woman can or should do Mila for men is, some would say that, right, but she did most of it, but then afterwards Moshe came and finished it off.
Okay.
Right? So that's the response, meaning in the debate of how that goes. But we're not getting into that. If you'd like to email me, I can
send. No, we'll wait for a future date.
Okay. I can send you some articles in English on the topic if you're so inclined. Okay, but remind me, I'll try and say that for another date then. Okay, so here we are. So now the question is, so now there's another question that that I addressed slightly, was the question of how did it come to this, right? So why didn't Moshe do the Mila right away? Like, what was he waiting for? Okay, so this is the question of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. So who'd like to read Rabbi Yehuda Anasi's question? Your second paragraph where my mouse is, if you can see it.
I can read it.
Okay.
Second paragraph?
Yeah.
I see your mouse is okay. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, heaven forbid that Moses, our teacher, was neglectful of the midst of circumcision. Rather, this is what he said. If I circumcise the child now and depart to begin my journey, it is danger for the child. That is stated, and it came to pass on the third day when they were in pain, which indicates that the pain of circumcision lasts for several days, and my child might be in danger while in pain. If I circumcise him immediately and wait 3 days, and then only embark on my journey, this is problematic. As the Holy One, blessed be He, said to me, go, return to Egypt, i.e. go immediately. For these reasons, Moses did not circumcise the child immediately, but no neglect existed on his part. But according to this explanation, for what reason was Moses punished? Because he was occupied with lodging first and did not immediately perform the midst of circumcision, as it is stated, and it came to pass on the way at the lodging place.
Right. So the problem isn't that he waited initially, it's that he decided to find a place to stay instead of, you know, once we're time for the night, first thing you do is you circumcise your son and then you'd go about finding the hotel to stay at. So that was the problem, is that the fact that he, that extra amount of time put right there, that was the issue, because he went for the lodging instead of the circumcision. Okay? This isn't the only version of the midrash. We'll hopefully get to another version of what of why he delayed and why that's not why it's more negative. Yes.
Okay, so it's I understand that Moshe. We are not Moshe Rabbeinu, but as parents or as anybody, when you get to the place of where you're going and you're tired, the first thing you look for is lodging.
Correct, but
remember, I understand it's a higher standard for Moshe Rabbeinu, but.
Correct.
That's just normal.
Right, but also remember that the mentioning of Malon is very rare in general in the Tanakh, right? So the only other people who stopped on Malon were, you know, Yosef's brothers on their way back, and then they found the money in their sacks. Right, that's the only other time that we really, like, a Malon is not a very common word, or like. Mentioning that you even had a stop is super rare. So it seems that there's something unique about involved there being the Malon, the inner hotel.
Okay.
Isn't it also the concept of mitzvahs that you're supposed to do them as soon as you can? You're not supposed to delay a mitzvah.
Correct. That's also why there's the minhag is often to do a brit milah first thing in the morning, as opposed to waiting till afternoon.
Didn't Aaron also say, "Don't bring your children with you. Don't bring your family with you," when you went back to
Mitzrayim? Right. So that happens later, like according to this midrash, meaning that this happened as they started their journey. And when did Aaron say send the kids back? That only happens when they get there.
Yeah.
So the other option you say is, I think Rashbam says that actions is out of order, and you know, really this would have happened later on. Not this didn't happen now. This happened later when Moshe went back to get his family, not now. But we'll have to see. We'll leave the timing of that part for now, I think. Okay, so. Now the next, here's that, too far. Okay. So now the question is, who was trying to be killed, right? So until now we've been saying that who was going to be killed? Moshe. Because who on earth could be killed? So for this now, so Rav Shimon Gamliel would like to argue with this though. Okay, so who would like to be Rav Shimon Gamliel?
The top one,
yeah.
Okay. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel says, it was not Moses, our teacher, that Satan wanted to kill, but rather that infant who is not circumcised, as it is stated. Surely a bridegroom of blood are you to me. Go out and see who does it make sense would be the one that is called the bridegroom. In this instance, you must say that it is the infant, since he is the one who entered the covenant with Abraham by means of the circumcision.
Okay, so, right. So this goes very much against what we thought, correct?
Right, different person.
Right, it's a different person, right? So who's the one, so then, which is strange, because this is talking about an 8-year-old boy being swallowed.
8 days old. 8 days old.
8 days old, right? 8 days old. It does not seem fair. But that is Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion, is that the angel was following him up. So also, you know, so Ibn Ezra points out that there apparently is a custom of amongst mothers to call their child before they're circumcised as chatan. Apparently there was this custom that there used to be like a term of affection for a young child. So, food for thought. Okay. So now, as far as what happened in terms of the swallowing story, so we have a little more information here than we had in the Midrash, which is probably very confusing. So who'd like to read about the angels?
I'll read.
Okay, thank you, mommy.
Where's the Rabbi Yehuda Barbizna? Him?
Yeah.
Rabbi Yehuda Barbizna taught, at the time that Moses, our teacher, was negligent about the circumcision, the destructive angels named Al?
Af. It's an F.
Af?
Oh. Af. Like anger.
Oh, meaning anger. And Chema, meaning wrath, came and swallowed him, and only his legs were left outside. Immediately Zipporah took a flint and cut off the foreskin of her son, and immediately he let him alone.
Okay.
At that moment.
Okay. So now we know who's swallowing who and why. Okay. So the angels, Charon Af, so Afachema, I mean God's anger, is now swallowing up Moshe. Okay.
Okay. Right. At that moment, Moses, our teacher, wanted to kill them, as it is stated, cease from anger and forsake wrath, which indicates that he wanted to harm them. And there are those who say he killed the angel named Chema, as it is stated, wrath is not in me. The Gemara asks, how is it possible to say that he killed Chema? Isn't it written that Moses himself said much later, for I was in dread of the anger and the wrath? The Gemara answers, there are two types of wrath. And if you wish, say that the army of Chema remained, but not the angel itself. Whoops.
Okay. Right. So it seems like there's something strange going on here with Moshe slaying the angel, which is strange to say the least. As far as for why this is, it's a good question. I'm not really sure what I don't know how to make much head or tail of. Right? But as in, just want to point out there that could be what's going on. Right? Whatever the actions that they do, it somehow manages to kill off the angels in this, whatever Torah and Moshe are doing.
Well, okay, to kill off the angels might be extreme, but we know that you can fight with angels because Yaakov fought the angel.
Right, correct. But this is another opinion is that he actually killed the angel. But not just that Vayarv Mimenu doesn't just mean that, right? What we think Vayarv Mimenu meant, we immediately think let him alone means that, that whatever is trying to attack Moshe, right, stopped attacking him. So this saying that the one who let him alone is actually the other way around, right? Moshe stopped trying to kill the angel, which is very much the exact opposite for what you thought it was. Correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. So again, you don't have to accept this reading, but that is an option. Okay. So I just wanted to point out another possibility for what happened, for why Moshe didn't do it. So this one is... We'll go with the English because it's transferred to Aramaic. So basically, I could do a new share. Let's see if I can pull it up. One moment. Let's see if I can pull up the Targum Yerushalmi. Oh, it's only in Hebrew. So I don't have it in English. Okay, so we'll go to my English summary over there. Okay, great. All right. So, sorry about that. Let's go back to the. Okay, here it is. So basically, so the Targum Yerushalmi, right, to one of the translations of the Torah into Aramaic, the one that we know of is Targum Onkelos, which largely translates things literally, but there's also something called Targum Yerushalmi, which translates it a little more loosely, and often it has certain midrashic inserts. So in there, so it mentions that the son who is circumcised is Gershon, and they also end up with this interesting deal that was done between Moshe and his father Yitro, about which son belongs to Moshe and which son ends up belonging to Moshe versus Yitro, right? So the question is, how on earth could Gershon not have been circumcised yet? Because we know he was born a while back. The answer is because apparently, you know, Rumpelstiltskin. I hope people. Mm-hmm. Right. So the original Rumpelstiltskin's name was Yitro. Right. Yitro has seven names, but apparently had an eighth one, Rumpelstiltskin. Right. That he required as part of the dowry to, you know, to have control over the faith of the newborn child. Okay. So I'll simply leave that there. Right. So that is a midrash, and then that would explain why didn't Moshe circumcise, because he cut a deal. Perhaps this is even worse though, because like, wait, why is Moshe cutting deals at the expense of his children? But yeah, that's the story. So the other question is, so again, so which son was circumcised? So again, so. Right, so the Targum of Yerushalayim that other, and the Midrash that it quotes is stating that it's Gershon, and on the other hand, we saw Midrash as well as quoted by Rashi, is that the uncircumcised son is the second son who's just been born, named Eliezer. Okay. So then the next question we have is where does the foreskin get placed? Okay. So in the Targum Yerushalmi, as it continues, it says that the one is placed by the feet of the angel. Okay? Which is a little strange, but right, but that's how, right. So remember how Moshe is being swallowed? So the question is, when Zipporah cuts off the foreskin and puts it by the feet, which is whose feet? So Midrash says it's Moshe's feet, because Moshe's feet, they're dangling out there, right? So then that's the way that that Zipporah stops Moshe from being swallowed. But the other option is that how do you stop either Moshe or the child from being swallowed? Is you put it by the feet of the angel. And the angel says, the angel here, see, look, I circumcised him. Now stop eating my husband or child now, because it's done. Okay, the other answer, again, no parish should say this, but the other answer could say it's maybe placed by the feet of Gershom or Eliezer, because, you know, when you finish the when you finish the Mila, you just want places down there. Like, you know. But yeah, nobody really says that either. No, I didn't see anybody who said that inside. None of the commentaries that's who plays by, but that is a possibility. Okay, last is who is the Chatan, which we mentioned, who has the Machloket in the Rav Shimon Gamliel, versus everybody else in the Gemara. So who is the Chatan? So again, so we of course until we read that Gemara, we also of course it's Moshe, because that's who her Chatan is. But then, right, but there is another option is that it was whichever son it was, which is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Okay, so this is Eliezer. All right. Okay, so I think that's the end of the presentation. Okay, so I hope we've gotten a little bit of clarity now on what exactly happened with that Midrash. If anybody has any questions, I'm happy to go over any part of what happened. But the main takeaway from the Midrash is Mitzvah Mila is extremely important. Moshe should not have delayed no matter what circumstances he may have had leading up to it. And because he delayed, that led to problems and almost led to either his son or his own death. Now I think we also answered all of the misplaced the ambiguous pronouns down the beginning of who met whom and where and how. And how also know that nobody says that it was God doing it, everybody agrees that it was an angel. So that was another option. You could say that since who's the one who met Moshe the whole time, technically it says Vayikra'ehu Hashem. Right, technically it says that God met him, which, you know, but is it on the other hand, you know, this seems very weird. Normally it would be strange if, you know, but again, assuming all the commentaries that we the Midrash as well as the Gemara, everybody seems to say there's no way that God actually swallowed up Moshe. It must be by means of an angel, because God doesn't really swallow people. No matter what you may have thought you saw in, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Okay.
But angels really are an extension of God. So it's not, you know, it's like God dispatches them. They don't have their minds of their own. Doesn't God dispatch the angels?
Correct. And that's why the Midrash and the Gemara and most before them say what they say, because God doesn't have a physical corporeal form to do so. So, but the angels are, you know, the physical manifestation of what God is doing. So therefore, that's how that'll work.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions?
Okay.
Okay, so if that's it, I'm going to end the recording here. Everybody's welcome to stick around and schmooze or ask other questions, but hopefully I'll see everybody next week for the next installment of the Covering Midrash. Okay.